Iran's President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad began a three-day tour of African nations on Tuesday, February 24th, which took him to Comoros, Djibouti, and Kenya. High on the agenda of the Iranian head of state is to have been promoting economic and political relations with Africa, as well as regional and international issues. This is at a time when Tehran has stated enhancement of ties with African states is one of its foreign policy priorities. Speaking in Kenya's second largest city of Mombasa, Iran's chief executive criticized the West for an oppressive colonial legacy and also praised the African nation's long-standing struggles for independence and combating projects aimed at plundering their national wealth. Ahmadinejad finally called for justice, peace, and progress to prevail throughout the world, arguing that the lack of such achievements is contributing to more war and conflict within Africa, and certainly beyond on the international scene. So Four Corners asks, how important is Ahmadinejad's trip to Africa? How it portrays the direction of Iranian foreign policy as a whole, and whether it would prove beneficial to improving Tehran's relations with other world countries?
Hi there, and welcome to Four Corners on Press TV with me, Zubin Zarvan. Joining me, we have in Tehran studios Dr. Sadegh Zibakalam. He's a professor in politics, Tehran University. And from London, we're joined by ex-Plo Nani Kofi. He's the editor of the Colombo, a Pan-African journal. A warm welcome to you both gentlemen. Now, let me come to you, Nani Kofi. You're familiar with the mood and mentalities of your people in that continent, and how important or significant is Iran to them?
How important is Iran to Africa? I think that's one thing which we have to refer to here is that 3 years ago, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, and who is the head of Iran, and the head of Venezuela, Chavez, addressed the African Union. The important thing about that was the relationship between countries which either are former colonies or are in the periphery of the world capitalist system, and we need to work together in a way that they can free themselves of the domination of the Western countries of North America and Western Europe. And in the case of Africa in particular, one of the roots of our present post-colonial crisis is the legacy of colonialism. The position that Iran is taking now in world affairs and also in terms of its independence in pursuing policies as an independent country, not kowtowing to the West, is important to even embolden the governments and the peoples of Africa in their struggle to free themselves from the colonial legacy that continues to be an obstacle for our advancement for social progress.
Okay, Dr. Zibakalam, in your opinion, did the Iranian president go to Africa in order to further boost economic trade and ties, or do you perhaps read more into that?
I don't think it had anything to do much as far as the economy was concerned. There are two fundamental elements in President Ahmadinejad's trip to Africa. First, it goes back to the strategy which has been associated as part of the Islamic Republic's foreign policy since the Islamic Revolution, and that is to extend ties with oppressed part of the world, and that includes Africa. Now, the second reason, the second fundamental reason, goes back to President Ahmadinejad's government. As I presume most of your listeners are aware, there have been an orchestrated campaign against President Ahmadinejad since he took office 3 years and 7 months ago. Many Western powers boycotted and so have the Arab countries and even some Islamic countries. Now, Ahmadinejad is trying to prove, or rather to demonstrate to his adversary that I'm not to be cowed by you, and if the West is blocking me, if the West is avoiding me, if the West is boycotting me, I could seek friends and allies elsewhere. Now, elsewhere could actually mean Venezuela, South America. Elsewhere could also mean Africa. So I think the main driving force behind Ahmadinejad's effort in mending bridges and building bridges with Africa is basically political rather than trade.
But Dr. Sinzibek, I'm still keeping with you in terms of forging alliances with potential friends and partners in the region, if not in the world. Now, to what extent is forging alliances with an African state, regardless of any names, significant politically and security-wise talking? I mean, Venezuela is a different example, but forging ties with Comoros, I mean, is this strategically any important for Iran?
Well, as I said, not really. I mean, none of the countries that, perhaps with the exception of Kenya, none of the other two countries are terribly important politically, strategically, or economically. As I said, Ahmadinejad is simply trying to make the point that Iran is not being isolated. Now, if that means going to Comore, if that means going to Djibouti, Ahmadinejad would do it merely to demonstrate to his adversaries that Iran is not isolated.
Okay, and back to you, Nani Kofi. Now, you spoke about that colonial project, which is still wreaking havoc throughout your continent. And I understand you're an expat, you're not a resident in Africa, but then you are following the situation on a daily basis. Now, to what extent does Iran and Iranian aspirations really fit into that?
I started by talking about the Iranian president's address to the African Union 3 years ago, which he addressed the heads of all the countries. He's gone to 3 countries now, but we cannot, we should not necessarily separate the two. The other thing that I find is that the Iranian president seems to be quite popular among a lot of African people who are very concerned about the colonial legacy in Africa. Although I'm not resident in Africa, the fact is I've just come back from Ethiopia, where I spent about a month, and which I even had an interview with Press TV. And okay. So the other thing which is important is the fact that it is necessary for these countries, which are marginalized countries in the world capitalist economy, to work together. And the despite the fact that both steps have not been seen from African governments yet, their cooperation with Iran can also strengthen these countries. And the fact is that Africa represents a very large portion of the world's land space, as well as the population of the world. So whilst people may not immediately see something strategic in relating with it, considering that large number of countries,
Nani Coffee, just to keep the dialogue going with you and expedite matter. Now, which part exactly of the Iranian president's argument and positions do the average African people like the most?
The question about the bullying of the West, because when he was in Africa, he did talk about the bullying of Africa by the West, and actually the bullying that Africa has seen, which is part of the colonial legacy, is something that ordinary Africans cannot continue to take, because Africans see themselves just as human as all others in the human race. And so the bullying from the West, which Ahmadinejad has openly opposed and talked about on his visit, is one thing which strikes the chord with the masses of African people.
Dr. Ziba Kalam, in his visit, President Ahmadinejad to Kenya, I suppose there were some suggestions or proposals made by the Iranians to the Kenyans about helping them with their nuclear ambitions, civilian nuclear ambitions. Now, what do you make of that? How significant is that for the two countries? And what kind of a message does it send out to the broader international community?
Well, President Ahmadinejad has been on the record offering Iran's nuclear know-how to other countries. He actually offered it to the Arabs. He also has been offering it to South America, and now he's been offering it to Kenya. But I don't think international community would allow to Iran to extend its atomic tie, as it were, to other countries. I mean, I presume even if Kenyan would want nuclear cooperation with Iran, there would be tremendous pressure from United States and the EU to prevent that.
Nani Coffee, now, why do you think that is? I mean, why should there be so much resistance and opposition to Iran economically and scientifically, technologically helping out an African country? What's wrong with that?
Yes, the fact is that if we just want to take it at a level of logic, no oppressive force has been prepared to lose its monopoly over control. And the fact is that the Western capitalist countries in the European Union and the United States would want to continue having a monopoly over control of nuclear technology and all this. And I think that this is even the reason why it is necessary for the marginalized countries to unite to break this monopoly, because there is no reason why these oppressive forces, we do not use military power in any rational way, because we look at the Americans, they've just invaded Iraq, they are occupying Afghanistan, and they are a major threat to world peace. And they are having a monopoly of this technology, the technology that they use in a very destructive way. So actually, they want to continue having that monopoly. And it is to break this monopoly that the marginalized countries have to unite with Iran and other countries.
Dr. Ziba Kalam, now let's focus a little bit on the broader picture about Iran's, the bulk of Iran's foreign policy and where it's directed at. Now, in your opinion, how successful has the president, Ahmadinejad, really been in terms of finding new friends in the world scene?
Well, certainly I give him full mark for trying to find new friends and allies. As I said, he has found friends and allies in South America. Now he's finding friends and allies in Africa. But really the question is how important politically, economically, geostrategically, internationally, really how significant and how important these allies are. I mean, I could think that there are far more important allies in the region, Egypt, Saudi Arabia, Turkey. These countries in the region would have been far more important as far as Iran's foreign policy was concerned. I mean, I really don't think we have made any progress towards mending bridges with some of our Arab neighbors. I would have thought that these were far more important. I mean, look at Iraq. It was only last week that they actually that there was in the news a mention of Iraqis having their nuclear power generated with French. I mean, if relations with Iran and Iraq were so amicable that we think that they are, then rather than asking Paris for nuclear assistance, certainly Prime Minister Nouri Maliki should have asked Iranians for nuclear assistance.
Now, Dr. Zeba Kalam, still with you. Now, many countries consider Iran a major significant influence in the region, and some of them have gone so far as calling Iran a regional superpower. Clearly, it is a force to be reckoned with. Now, tell me about the nuances and the complexities, the intricacies of present-day Iranian foreign policy.
Well, the point is that we claim, or rather we wish, to be a regional superpower. But the point is that do we act as a regional superpower? I mean, look at the relation with Bahrain. It was stirred up with a comment that a senior clergy made last week. Now, I think to be a regional superpower is one thing, and to act like a regional superpower is quite different. I mean, United States is a world power, but I mean it doesn't carry much weight in the region, even though United States is a very very powerful. But I would have thought that I don't know, another country, France, certainly carries much more respect in the region than the United States. So being a regional superpower does not necessarily imply that other countries are paying more respect and towards Tehran.
Nani Kofi, now, do you think Iran can really be an inspiration to most African countries who are struggling with the colonial project's remnants?
The fact is that the way in which Iran has been looked at by the West as a threat, and the way in which the main problem the African countries face is the colonial legacy, the legacy of enslavement. Actually, Iran will obviously be an inspiration. I even think that Iran is not making enough efforts in being seen as an inspiration in that way.
I mean, could you be more specific in which way can Iran achieve that?
Oh, yes. The fact is that I think that the visit to the three countries is a small step, and I think that just like the president addressed the African Union, there must be speedy follow-up to his presence in the African Union summit as a follow-up, because I know that in other countries, the Iranian diplomatic services around Africa are well received.
Dr. Zeba Kalam, could you break down for us, and I suppose you have a response so you can add that to it, the priorities of Iran's foreign policy and how Africa really fits into that?
Can I just intervene and
absolutely
raise an objection to what our African colleague in London is saying? I really don't think Iran's popularity, or for that matter, Ahmadinejad's popularity in Africa is due to his anti-Western crusade, his anti-colonialism crusade, because I think we have gone beyond this stage that these speeches and taking position against the white supremacy, against the colonial power, carries much weight. I mean, look at Mugabe. I mean, Robert Mugabe, he has been for decades an anti-capitalism, an anti-colonialist hero. But look at his position now. I mean, the man has turned simply to a despot, to a dictator, and he's not loved. He's not respected by many people in his own country, let alone other African states. And the same applies to Ahmadinejad or any other. So I really don't buy that argument that African people are respecting Iranian Islamic leaders because they are anti-Western or they talk so loudly and so sharply and so radically against
them. You don't have information about Africa.
Go ahead, Nani.
You don't buy it, but that doesn't mean that you don't have information about what Africans' positions are. And the fact is that you do not know the reason why Mugabe is looked at that way. People are also concerned that for 20 years, Mugabe left, who might have anti-colonial rhetorics, left the land in the hands of the white farmers, and it's only when he became unpopular that he started shouting these rhetorics again. So you have to put things in context, my brother.
I would have thought South African leaders are much more respectful and much more as a model for many African statesmen. Nelson Mandela and as I said, other South African leaders, they carry much more respect than someone like Mugabe, who is staunchly anti-Western.
Nani Kofi?
Yeah, the fact is that you might not have heard that Mandela is booed in his own country as well. So that's why I'm saying that you need some information. Your assumptions are not just what is necessary, but making assumptions might not reflect the full situation. There is no reason why you should think that Africans don't consider the struggle against colonialism and the opposition to the West's bullying important.
Okay, Nani, I'd like you to stop there in 10 seconds.
That there are lesser species,
please,
of the human race.
Nani, in 10 seconds, please make your very final comments.
Yes, I would want to warn the professor not to assume that Africans are any worse species of the human race and don't respect their struggle for independence.
Okay,
if he takes that into consideration,
your final
he
comments,
must
please, sir.
Be very more careful about his statements.
Thank you, Nani.
I think in Africa, today in Africa, as in many other parts of the world, issues like freedom, democracy, human rights carry much more weight than being anti-colonialism and anti-imperialism
and
anti-capitalism.
We're just, ending the show right here, no more time. A big thank you to Mrs. Ziba Chalaman and Kofi for joining us and to you for watching us. You can throw us your thoughts by using the email address, and for more information, go to our website. This show, Four Corners, will return. Until then, it's goodbye from me, Judy Zarvan.